My name is Monica Penowitt. I'm a master's student here at Iowa State University, and I work with nematodes in the soil. And joining me is Fernando.
Hi, Monica. First, thank you very much for your invitation. I'm very excited about to talk about my research about seed treatments. I'm from Brazil, and I have a bachelor's degree in agronomy. And during all my career, since undergrad and grad student and professional experience, I always worked with seeds. And after graduating, I worked for Monsanto in Brazil for almost 5 years in different departments, including supply chain, corn phenotyping, field production of pre-commercial seeds. But in 2018, I came to ISU to start my master's with Dr. Gary Monkvold, where my focus is the assessment of nanoencapsulated fungicides and employment of them as seed treatment against Fusarium graminearum on corn and soybeans.
So yeah, great to have you here. Obviously, my specialty is not Fusarium, so I'm excited to have you here to talk about your research. And in case anyone doesn't know, this podcast is actually filmed and recorded for credit for the Iowa State Extension and Cooperative class that we have here within the departments of plant pathology, agronomy, entomology, and horticulture. So trying to branch out, learn a little bit more, and try to figure out the best way to connect with our shareholders across the state. So I think we can just start with a little bit more about what is Fusarium and go from there.
Okay. So Fusarium species is a very important genus of fungi. You can find Fusarium everywhere. Different species, colonizing different species of plants also. And it's the most broadly studied fungi, and especially for agriculture. And the species that I'm working with is Fusarium graminearum. This name is because it colonizes a lot of grasses and in general. And it can infect different species like corn, wheat, barley, and soybean as well. And this is a very important point if you want to try to design a strategy for management for your farm and you have been planting soybeans and corn, the amount of the pathogen is going to be up very fast. It's going to be very dangerous for you. That's the main point. And if you talk more about corn, you can see symptoms since seedlings, from seedlings until reproductive stage, and also corn that's almost ready to be harvested. So you need to use different strategies to manage it. Otherwise, you can have big losses.
So from my understanding, the biggest issue with Fusarium, especially like you said, these things that grow here in Iowa, you know, corn, some wheat, soybeans, is that it can actually impact the grain, right?
Yeah, true. Because it also produces mycotoxins. And the impact of these losses due to the impact of this in the field and also the grain that was harvested was 2.7 billion from 98 to 2000 alone.
So it's just in 2 years.
In 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's huge. And it's increasing. Because we continue planting corn and soybeans, And also, this mycotoxin can kill animals that feed up using this grain. If you use wheat or corn, mycotoxin can cause reduced feeding by the animals and thereby slower grain gain and loss of weight. And at higher concentrations of the mycotoxin, the animals are induced to vomit and totally refuse to eat and die.
So that's definitely not good for Iowa's ag industry, yeah. Considering a lot of our corn and soybeans and wheat and all that kind of go to help feed some more of our animals and stuff.
True.
So, I mean, I guess we can talk a little bit about the disease cycle and how it comes about, what farmers can like look for, and how best to scout it.
Yeah. So the main thing about starting to scout for this pathogen is the way you treat your residue, because the fungus can overwinter on the residue, and if you don't destroy it, like using tillage or other practices, the pathogen is going to be there until a new fresh leaf is there. And then on the new leaves, on the new plants, they are going to terminate and colonize and start a new cycle over and over again. It's a polycyclic disease, so the impact can be huge within one season.
Because polycyclists continue throughout the season, they can continue to reinoculate new plants, correct?
Yeah. And then the seed that's contaminated, if you plant that seed, it's gonna generate a diseased plant as well. So the cycle continues. You need management of the residue, you need management during the season, and you need management before the season starts. If you plant a season that you a seed that you don't know if it's pure, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you're buying seed from like your local seed producer, whoever you buy it from, how do you know that that doesn't already have either this pathogen or another one?
You need to be sure that you're buying seed that's healthy. So if you buy from big companies or companies that have all those banners of quality on the bag and everything, they're going to be clean. But if you use treatments like seed treatments and for any reason there is a spore inside the seed or something that makes the seed diseased, if you use a seed treatment that can reduce the risk and you can have a healthy field even though you planted diseased seeds, that's the main thing.
Okay.
Especially if you have a fungicide, a systemic fungicide that will protect the seed and also protect the seedling.
So especially with this year, since everyone knows we've had a really crazy spring here in Iowa, precipitation since last May to this April was increased by 2.5 inches for annual precipitation, so including snowfall, rainfall. And even with us having 2 times the normal rainfall just in the month of May, which ranks us in our top 5 in history, which, you know, led to flooding, delayed planting for corn and soybeans in various regions across the state. How would this have an impact potentially on this disease and scouting times?
I would say that everything that makes the plant suffer will help the disease. And then more rain, flooding, this all together will impair how the plants will be uptaking nutrients and oxygen, and also the chemicals that you put on seed treatment, for example. And plants suffering more means that the pathogen is there taking advantage of it. So this is going to be harder for the plants to overcome. So you're going to see more disease. And also, if the plants are not developing in normal conditions, like with colder temperatures, and the fungus is even harder for the plants. So you're going to see more disease if you have an environment like that.
So if we were to go out and scout like a wheat field or something here in Iowa, what would we look for? Is there anything we can do before it totally takes over the entire head? And as you said, kind of develops into that mycotoxin, is there anything we look for before that as a preventative?
Yeah, if you already used a seed treatment and you're not seeing seedling diseases in the beginning of the season, you might need to, first, you need to know the history of your area to know if the pathogen is there in the first place,
mm-hmm.
and how is the pressure of that pathogen. Knowing that and using a seed treatment, and if you don't see any symptoms of seedlings dying, you can try to see if you see some symptoms close to the reproductive stage, and then you can do an application of fungicide. That's a way to see, you could see it like that, but I had a professor that used to say that you need to spray when you see symptoms and not use, like, if you won't think that might be there, don't spray it because you're spending money, you're developing resistance. So bring experts to your field, be there all week, all the time to see if symptoms appear. If they do, you can start and do a spray application.
So say I do use a seed treatment in my field, should I use the same chemistry for the fungicide as a double whammy, or do I need to rotate that?
That's a good question. There are many ingredients that are used for seed treatments, but some of them are being used as a seed treatment and also as a spray. And if you keep using the same ingredient, you develop a problem of resistance. So if you are using a neonicotinoid for insecticide, don't use it the same one as a spray. And you need to rotate the active ingredients to avoid that problem. And then you can have a sustainable management of diseases and insects in your farm. And you can continue using the same rotation and during many years.
So on the topic of seed treatments, how common are these used, and you know, what exactly is a seed treatment?
They're very used. I'm not sure about the percentage of farmers that are using, but I'd say that it's almost 90%, something like that, 95. They are very important because you can prevent diseases in the beginning of the season. Because if you have less plants inside your within your area, definitely your yield would be impaired. So the market value of seed treatment is increasing massively for the past years. The value of global seed treatment market doubled between 2002 and 2008, which is huge. And now it's more than $2 billion annually in the U.S.
That's a lot of money spent
treatments. And see this, the forecast of for 2023 is to reach more than $3 billion here and 12 globally. This is increasing very much because seed treatments, they have some advantage, mainly about disease resistance, about the amount of chemical that you use, the impact on the environment, because you're doing a very targeted application, using less chemical, and you're impacting less the environment. And the efficacy is good, mainly in the beginning of the season. I cannot say how much time it's going to last, but some companies say they can last more than 2 weeks. That's something that we need to research on, but it's kind of impressive. But even if it doesn't last for a long time, it's still a good option from the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it sounds like it'd be a good idea in order to get your crops off to a good start, get them to start growing, sure, establishing those roots. Sure. And with, you know, a soil-borne disease like fusarium, yeah, it could be definitely important. I could see that.
Yeah. Another thing that's a good point, it's very safe. The seed comes already treated, and some cases you treat yourself, but it's a simple practice. Yeah, and that's it.
So how would a producer know if like they should start using fungicide within their seed treatments? Like, what's a good determining factor for them?
Mm-hmm. I think the main thing is the history of the area. If you're planting a new area, it's kind of tough. But if you are a farmer that has planted more than 40 years, you already know if you're going to see some diseases or not. So main thing is the history of seedling disease and the level of the fungal infections that you saw in the past years. If you plant into wet, cold soils, if this is common for you, especially if you no-till or reduced tillage is a practice in your farm. And if you have a lot of residue also. A good practice is also to rotate crops, especially if you use resistant varieties. Some hybrids are more susceptible to than others. And then if you keep using corn or soybean varieties that are very susceptible to the soybean diseases, it's kind of important for you to use a fungicide. This can be very critical for your beginning of your season.
Okay, so of course, you know, like with using any sort of method of treatment, there's got to be some downfalls. We're talking about some of the positives with it being safe and, you know, using less chemicals, more targeted application. But what are some of the downfalls that we might have to compensate for in another method of management?
True, yeah. As we were talking about, we use less chemical, and the target application is a very small amount of soil that we are putting chemical there. So the dissipation of that chemical is very rapid. And the plants can uptake some of that chemical, because if you put like a jar of chemical there, the plant will not be able to drink everything, mm-hmm, uptake everything. And then there's this limiting uptake rate of the plant tissue. Other target organisms will also absorb that. It's less than the spray, but still, we have the problem of the dust off. And then this is a huge problem for the neonics, because they are killing pollinators. I believe that the companies are working very hard to reduce that, and they will. But if a seed treatment has a lot of dust, it's not a safe option. Definitely don't do that. Don't use that.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing that we're talking about already is about using the same chemical. So this is a huge problem. If you use the same chemical as a seed treatment and also as a spray, this is not a good option. Don't do that. You're going to increase the pressure for resistance. And another thing is you have low flexibility. You have just one chance. You treat and you plant and that's it. You cannot redo that. As if you use it as a spray, or you always can do it again,
mm-hmm.
right? If it's necessary.
Right. So how much does the weather impact the efficacy of the seed treatment? So say if I treated my corn with one of these seed treatments, and then, you know, this year with all the water and like if it was standing in water for how long, like how would that impact its efficacy to actually mm-hmm. work?
Yeah. So mainly rain and flooding can accelerate dissipation by washing the active ingredients. Another point that cold temperatures can hold the plant development and postpone the vegetative uptake of the treatment, meaning that the treatment will leak rather than being absorbed by the plant. So if the plant is not uptaking due to environmental conditions or you have a lot of water inside the soil, I'd say that the efficacy will go lower and lower.
Okay, so like this year, for say people are seeing more disease in their fields, it could just be because if it was planted and had a lot of rain fall events.
Probably, yeah. Especially if the plant started late and other fields started earlier. So the presence of the pathogen and everything is going to be built up at the beginning of the season. And then when you plant, the pressure of the pathogen is already high. And then when you plant, the treatment's there, but the water, the amount of water is too much for the plant to overcome. So everything that you make the plant suffer, you're going to see more diseases. Yeah.
Okay. So what exactly do you do with your research that you're doing with these seed treatments and with Fusarium directly?
Mm-hmm. The research that we are working with, the supervision of Dr. Gary Monkwood, we're trying to control this release of the treatment that we place on seed. Mainly, we're trying to use the same amount, but we're trying to control the release, make this chemical to last longer. That's the main thing. Because the main bottleneck of seed treatments is this rapid dissipation. And to address that, we are trying to control the release by encapsulating them inside nanoparticles. Do you know what's a nanoparticle?
I really don't. I know some things, but not what a nanoparticle is. No.
Yeah. So a nanoparticle is a particle inside the scale of a nanometer. And it's hard to remember from high school what a nanometer is. But if you think about different objects, if you think about a tennis ball, a tennis ball has 10 to the 8 nanometers. And if you go to salt grain, 10 to the 6, and then cell, viruses, small particles, the nanoparticle was going to be between a DNA and a virus.
Very small.
And inside this huge range of particles, we were working with polymers. It's like plastic. And then inside each particle, we have a tiny small amount of the fungicide. And then we have all these particles together. And what we are doing is that this polymer is going to be degrade slowly, much, much slower than if the fungicide was alone. And then what we are doing is that this protection of the chemical is holding the fungicide inside.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to see if doing that we can control the release and keep the chemical being released in a slower manner. And we could prevent the rapid dissipations and control diseases and damage for more time. That's the main thing. And so far, the results that we gather suggest that some improvements can be seen using these polymers. We need some adjustments regarding the proportion of the monomers that we are using. Some chemicals will work better than others. We still can use bioproducts. Is a great new field to try new ideas. And you also need to know if these particles can be stored, because if not, it's going to be harder for the industry, harder for farmers to do it. So we're working on that to make it feasible for farmers.
Will these particles also help more with the dust-off problem? You know, when you're putting your seed in and they're rubbing against each other, some of that treatment coming off and potentially causing issues for pollinators, do you think that that could help?
That's a very good question. I thought about that question before. Unfortunately, we didn't do any research regarding this issue, but I would say so. That's a good hypothesis to test.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe in the future. Yeah.
So how do you hope that this research that you're currently doing impacts the future of seed treatments within the industry and with what producers can actually purchase for their use?
We could prevent treatments from being washed out and keep them around the seed and the roots for more time. We can have a scenario where plants on stage V7 or around 35 days old are still absorbing a systemic fungicide and improving the control of these diseases and keep the high stand of plants. This is the main thing that I hope to happen. And also allied to that, we could add insecticides, we could add bioproducts, and if we could reduce the number of applications of insecticides during the season, that would be very, very good for us, for farmers, to reduce costs for the environment and for everybody. Maybe we could decrease to zero the number of applications of insecticides if we use this strategy, plus if you have a GMO, plus if you have a corn or hybrid that's resistant to most of diseases, you can have a very sustainable agriculture. And at least if this is a good strategy, we could at least decrease the amount of chemical that we are using if we can hold the chemical better, but not for the entire season. At least we could apply less chemical at the first place. That's one thing that could impact our agriculture in the future, hopefully.
I think that would definitely be good, especially when you think about everyone really looking at sustainable practices and what we can do to be better about, you know, like the future. With, you know, if it's global warming or just looking at how you can be a better manager and steward of your own land.
True.
So, you know, to kind of wrap it up here, what are some things that we really should think about when it comes to Fusarium and using these seed treatments and things that we should remember about this disease and how we can prevent it from causing, you know, yield losses and the $1.2 billion decrease that we were seeing before?
Mm-hmm. Besides the environmental conditions that we cannot control, we need to try to see what can we do better every year. And it's a lot must be done around this topic. Agriculture is very complex, but also it's very exciting to see that we could treat plants in a different way that we cannot see today in the agriculture. But would you imagine a seed treatment that could last until harvest? Today is hard to believe, but maybe not impossible in 10 or 15 years. Regarding employment of or not of seed treatments, it's hard to say that everybody should do this or that. Agriculture is very complex and challenging. A solution can work for me in my farm, but not for my friend in Minnesota or Texas or Brazil. There are many studies suggesting that seed treatments can help to protect plants and yield, but all others saying that in seasons with low incidence of diseases, it's just money down the drain. Based on what we see working with fungicides, season with cold temperatures in areas with history of seedling diseases, seed treatment can prevent seedling death. The seed is the most important character, is the most expensive character in agriculture, and it is what is carrying the potential for high yields, and if the history says you need to protect it, do it. If it's possible, save a tiny part of your area and do some tests, add another treatment or a different dosage to see if what is done by researchers in greenhouses or research stations and see if works in your system, in your conditions, and take data, notes, anything that can help you to decide every year what might help you to reach better results. And after all, who knows better your farm than yourself, right? Mm-hmm. That's the main thing. If you work hard outside, if you scout your field every week and do some tests, I think this is a safe place to be.
So thank you, Fernando, for coming. That was really knowledgeable for me to listen to you talk about that. And I hope our listeners agree as well. So just for the listeners, if you guys have more questions, we urge you to reach out to your local extension, any local agronomist that you may work with, the ISU Seed Science Center and their websites online, local extension events that are going on across the state, hit up an event to ask some more questions. And of course, you can always submit a sample to the Plant Insect Diagnostics Clinic here on campus. So there's all kinds of things for you to be able to do to make sure that your fields are in the best they can be, in the best shape possible. So thanks for tuning in, and we appreciate it.